Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is November 22nd, 2016, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is, I Want to Be Sedated, but Do I Need to Be NPO? And our guest skeptic is Dr. Bob Edmonds, who just completed his residency in emergency medicine from the University of Missouri in Kansas City. He is now an emergency department staff physician in the U.S. Air Force at Langley Air Force Base. This is Bob's third visit to the SGEM. Welcome back, Bob.
Thanks, Ken. Always a pleasure. Now that I've graduated residency, just a quick disclaimer. The views and opinions of this podcast and blog are not the official position of the United States Air Force, the U.S. government, or Langley Air Force Base.
Now, I was wondering, why did you pick this paper to review at this time?
Well, I always enjoyed Thanksgiving quite a bit, and it got me to thinking about little kids that want to eat, especially if you're trying to tell them not to eat.
Well, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving this weekend, but why don't you give the case presentation?
Sure. A 5-year-old girl was bit in the face by a neighbor's dog. She has a complex lower lip laceration that extends beyond the vermilion border with a flap deformity. You believe it will require repair by oral maxillofacial surgery in your emergency department, and that the patient will require procedural sedation. The patient had been eating a turkey sandwich 1 hour ago, and you consider how long to leave her NPO prior to the sedation.
Well, procedural sedation is a somewhat common practice in the emergency department for a number of pediatric cases, such as laceration repair, incision and drainage, close reduction of fractures, and radiographic studies such as CT scans.
The American Society of Anesthesiologists 2011 practice guidelines recommends waiting 2 hours for clear liquids, 6 hours for light meals, and 8 hours may be needed in other cases before elective procedures requiring general anesthesia, regional anesthesia, or sedation / analgesia. They recognize that these guidelines may not apply to emergency care.
Well, the American College of Emergency Physicians clinical policy on procedural sedation and analgesia in the emergency department from 2013 gives a level B recommendation for not delaying procedural sedation in adults or pediatric emergency department patients based on fasting time. Quote, pre-procedural fasting for any duration has not demonstrated a reduction in the risk of emesis or aspiration when administering procedural sedation and analgesia. End of quote. So what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer today, Bob?
Do we need to delay procedural sedation of pediatric emergency department patients based on their NPO status?
And what's the reference?
It's by Beach et al., Major Adverse Events and Relationship of Nil per Os Status in Pediatric Sedation / Anesthesia Outside the Operating Room from Anesthesiology, January 2016.
All right, let's run through that, Pete. Go, that population intervention comparison and outcome.
The population was all pediatric patients undergoing procedural sedation at one of the 42 Pediatric Sedation Research Consortium sites from September 2, 2007 to November 9, 2011.
Procedural sedation anesthesia was defined as, quote, any pharmacologic intervention made to facilitate an invasive procedure or test in a pediatric age patient outside of the operating room environment, end of quote. What was the intervention?
NPO to solids for at least 8 hours, non-clear fluids for at least 6 hours, and clear fluids for at least 2 hours.
And what was the comparison?
Patients who failed to meet the above NPO criteria.
And how about their outcome?
Ken, there were two primary outcomes.
Okay. So they had rate of aspiration. An aspiration episode was defined as an event where emesis was noted or food material was found in the oropharyngeal cavity and associated with any of the following: a new cough, wheeze, increased respiratory effort, change in chest radiograph indicative of aspiration, or new need for oxygen therapy after recovery from sedation.
The other was occurrence of a major adverse event, which included aspiration, as well as death, cardiac arrest, or unplanned admission to a hospital.
So the author's conclusion was, quote, the analysis suggests that aspiration is uncommon. NPO status for liquids and solids is not an independent predictor of major complications or aspiration in this sedation anesthesia data set. End of quote. All right, Bob, you know, we run through a quality checklist, and we've got a quality checklist for observational studies. The first question is, did the study address a clearly focused issue?
Yes. Adverse outcomes related to NPO status for procedural sedation outside the operating room.
Did the authors use an appropriate method to answer their question?
Yes. They wanted to evaluate if any links existed between NPO status and aspiration, pulmonary adverse events, and major adverse events. A prospective observational study can be used to identify associations.
Was the cohort recruited in an acceptable way?
Yes, they had consecutive enrollment at multiple centers.
Was the exposure accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes. The primary analysis was only using data where NPO status was known. If NPO status was unknown for a variable like solids or liquids, the entire thing was marked as unknown. A secondary analysis was used with a multiple imputation model to try to make up for the group of patients where NPO status was not known.
Was the outcome accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes and no.
Have the authors identified all important confounding factors?
No.
Was the follow-up of subjects complete?
Yes.
How precise are the results or the estimate of risk?
Unfortunately, not great. With only a few events, the 95% confidence intervals are wide.
Do you believe the results?
Yes.
Can the results be applied to the local population?
I'm unsure.
Do the results of this study fit with other available evidence?
Yes, they do.
All right, well, let's go through those key results. They had almost 140,000 procedural sedation anesthesia encounters identified in their data set. NPO status was known for over 100,000 patients, with 25,000, or about 25%, were not NPO. They observed 75 major complications. 62 were unplanned admissions, 10 aspirations, 3 cardiac arrests, and no deaths.
The primary outcome showed no statistical association between NPO status and major complications or aspiration.
All right, let's talk a little nerdy. We've got 5 points to go through. And the first one we were going to mention was asking the right question. Now, they did answer the question that they asked, if there were any links that existed between NPO status and aspiration, pulmonary adverse events, and major adverse events. A prospective observational study can be used to identify associations. However, what we want to know is cause and effect of NPO status on pediatric emergency department patients requiring procedural sedation. And it would take a randomized control trial to investigate causation. The trial would need to be very large given the low event rate. And finally, it would need to take place in the emergency department with pediatric emergency patients.
Our next point talks about outcome bias. So aspiration did have a clear definition that was easily measured. However, the definition of major adverse events or complications was recognized as being arbitrary by the authors. They specifically point out that unanticipated intubation or an emergency anesthesia consult may result in some provider bias.
The third point was confounders. While they were able to collect data on the type of practitioner, ASA status, type of procedure, and other things, they were not able to differentiate the type of solid food eaten and if the care had been transferred to an anesthesiologist in the operating room for intubation.
Next was precision of the results. Because there were only a few events, the 95% confidence intervals around the point estimate were wide.
And the fifth and final point we were going to make was about applying the result to your local population. And it all depends. The authors note a limitation that, quote, the providers of the sedation in this particular study were working in a high-performance sedation teams, end of quote. If your hospital does not have a high-performance sedation team that provides service to your emergency department, the results may not apply to your site. In addition, these were mainly elective procedures, and only a minority were classified as emergencies and performed by emergency physicians. But let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
We generally agree with the author's conclusions.
Well, how about a bottom line then?
It is reasonable not to delay procedural sedation in a pediatric emergency department patient based on their NPO status.
And can you give us a case resolution?
You have an informed discussion with the family regarding their daughter's injury and the risks of sedation. You make a joint decision to proceed with the sedation now and have oral maxillofacial surgery perform the laceration repair. The child undergoes the sedation without complications and upon awakening asks to go home.
So, Bob, how are you going to take this information and apply it clinically?
Well, it'll always be difficult to risk stratify rare conditions, but this paper offers support to those in favor of more rapid initiation of procedural sedation, regardless of MPO status. I'm a little more tacit with adoption of this paper into practice. I support the findings of the paper, but the study was limited for some of the reasons we discussed. The paper does support ASEP's clinical guidelines and adds to the available evidence to support procedural sedation independent of MPO status. However, as always, you must use your own judgment.
So what are you going to tell your patient?
Well, Ken, I'd tell their parents that complications from procedural sedation are uncommon, but something we constantly prepare for. A common thought in medicine is that there is increased risk of one of these complications if sedation is started after recent food or drink ingestion. A study of a large group of children recently demonstrated no increased risk based on food or drink ingestion. The American College of Emergency Physicians says emergency doctors should not delay procedures based on fasting time. With your permission, we'd like to begin the sedation now to repair your daughter's injury.
That sound reminds me that it's time for the Keener contest. The last episode of the S-Gem was an S-Gem Extra, so we have no winner to announce. But we do have a Keener contest question this time. What is it, Bob?
In procedural sedation, what is the medical term for the ketamine tiger?
Ooh, if you know the answer, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. There are some other forum resources on the topic, and I will put some links into the show notes. Thanks, Bob, for coming back on the S-Gem, and good luck with your new job, and enjoy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Ken. I always appreciate being on the show. I just wanted to wish everyone out there a happy Thanksgiving, or if you're in Canada, a very belated happy Canadian Thanksgiving.
Well, don't forget, there is still time to sign up for Ski Beam. That's January 23rd to 25th in Sun Peaks, British Columbia. Come for some great skiing and some great CME. Bob, can you give the S-Gem tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.